You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
I was all set to go off. I was all set to not only go off, but instruct all of you to go off with me. I was going to open this week's show blowing up at a high school, blowing up at some high school administrators, and asking you to do the same, to get online, to send emails, to blow up their social media feeds. Because at North Bend High School in Oregon, gay students are being harassed. Queer students are being harassed. A queer student, a woman, a girl who complained to the school administration was told that if she was going to be, quote, an open member of the LGBT community, that she should prepare for things like this. And the officer, the administrator, went on to say that being gay was a choice and it was against his religion, and said that although he had homosexual friends, all the bigots have homosexual friends. It's amazing. Who are these homosexuals? When someone who is anti-queer tells you that they have queer friends, the next thing out of your mouth has to be produce them. But anyway, he says he has homosexual friends, but he told this student because she was an open homosexual, she was going to hell. Wouldn't be so bad though, because she would get to go to hell with his queer friends who are already in kind of a hell right now, being this motherfucking piece of shit's friend. Sounds like hell to me. Anyway, I was going to sick you all on North Bend High School because this is not okay. And North Bend High School, a public high school. School administrators in public high schools shouldn't be signing off on the bullying of queer students or bringing up God or telling students they're going to hell, which, like God, doesn't exist. But I'm happy to report that before I could get to the microphone to blow up about North Bend High School, it's already a happy ending at North Bend High School. Willamette Week reports North Bend High School principal Bill Lucero and school resource officer, the dude with the gay friends who are going to hell, who are already in hell because they're his friends, Jason Griggs, are being removed from their jobs in the district settlement with the American Civil Liberties Union of Oregon. The firings come after complaints from former and current students, including Liv Funk and Haley Smith, about suffering anti-LGBTQ harassment and discrimination from classmates and school administrators. Good on the school board for getting rid of Principal Bill Lucero and Jason gay friends Griggs. And of course, they did that because the American Civil Liberties Union got involved. LGBTQ students have rights. And thanks to the ACLU and thanks to the ACLU taking LGBTQ bullying in high schools seriously, LGBTQ kids also, in addition to rights, have lawyers. So instead of sticking you on North Bend High School, which is doing the right thing because they saw the writing on the wall, I'm going to ask everybody who has a few dollars to spare to make a thank you donation to the American Civil Liberties Union of Oregon. There's no graceful way to segue to the next thing I wanted to say at the top of the show, so I'm just going to make the leap. I'm going to pivot. A lot of people write me, a lot of people call me, particularly at live shows. I get this question constantly. How do you keep the spark alive? How do you maintain sexual interest and passion in a long-term relationship? And my advice is always have adventures together. Remember what it was like when you first met and you first got naked in front of each other. It was dangerous. It was risky. You didn't know this person from Adam or very well at all. And you were making yourself extremely vulnerable. What if they're a crazy person or a serial killer? Ah, it's scary that first time you fuck somebody, or the first 7 or 8 times, or the first 70 or 80 times you fuck somebody. It feels a little risky and dangerous, inherently built in the risk and danger that gets the adrenaline flowing and the blood pumping to the parts of your body that need the blood. But a long-term relationship, 10, 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years in, yeah, that risk and danger, that sense of vulnerability, that's not there unless you manufacture it. And that's the trick to keeping the passion alive in a long, long, long-term relationship. You have to manufacture a little bit of risk and danger and get the adrenaline pumping by going on sexual adventures together. So that's what Terry and I did last weekend. If we can do it at 24 years, coming up on 25, coming up on that quarter of a century mark, you can do it. I get this question from people who've been together 4 years, 5 years, 7 years. We can do it at 24. You can certainly do it at 5. Figure out something, and I'm not telling people who are in monogamous relationships to go have non-monogamous adventures. You can figure out something that you, if you're in a monogamous relationship, can do together that has some element of risk that makes the adrenaline pump and the blood come rushing in after it. Get out there and do something different. If you're wondering why your sex life isn't very exciting right now and you are having sex with the same person in the same place at the same time and doing the same shit over and over and over again, that's the reason. Shake up your routine like we did this weekend. And a big thanks to all of our friend at IML who helped us do that this weekend. And while you have your credit cards out because you were making a quick donation, a thank you donation to the American Civil Liberties Union of Oregon, ITMFA, ImpeachTheMotherfuckerAlready.com or ITMFA.org. We are now selling Pride t-shirts and tank tops. Sales benefit. All proceeds go to Planned Parenthood, the American Civil Liberties Union, and the International Refugee Assistance Project. Each one of these organizations is doing really important work supporting the LGBTQ plus community, and each one of these organizations is at risk because of that motherfucker in the White House who right now is going after Planned Parenthood. Please visit ITMFA.org. Get your Pride shirts now. Share photos of you and your ITMFA gear and Pride shirts on social media with the hashtag ITMFA. For new listeners, of course, ITMFA stands for ImpeachTheMotherfuckerAlready.com. The t-shirt just says ITMFA. The fun is people will ask you what ITMFA stands for, and you get to tell them. And their reaction? That'll tell you everything you need to know about them. All right, coming up on today's show, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the Magnum subscription edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, twice as long and no ads, Ask a Fuck Up, Brandi Jensen, brand new advice columnist, joins us for a very special second opinion segment. All that on today's show. Me Undies makes feel-good underpants your butt will be proud to wear and you will be proud to be seen in. They will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will ever own. And to check it out yourself, go to MeUndies.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Wink, the wine club that helps you find the wines that you will love. Get $20 off your first order when you go to TryWink.com/savage. Today's episode is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron delivers all fresh, high-quality ingredients and recipes you need to create delicious home-cooked meals. Get your first three meals for free by going to blueapron.com/savage.
Hey, Dan, I'm the tech savvy at-risk youth. I'm a bi-married cis gal calling from the Midwest. So to give you some background, I'm part of a friend group of lots of couples, mostly married. One of our friend couples who is not married recently had a situation where he shoved her at a party that I wasn't at. The guy in the situation has some mental health issues. He was off medication. They had a really frank talk about it, it sounds like, and he agreed to get back on medication, return to therapy. She decided to stay in the relationship. All of our other friends were really concerned about her since this was bullshit abusive behavior, but they've decided to stay together, and I'm really struggling. And I think most of my friends are struggling with how to be supportive and figure out how we should behave to this guy in the future. You know, some of our friends are saying, like, they don't want to have anything to do with him, which I kind of understand because what he did was really horrible. And other people are saying, like, I want to be supportive of her. And since they're still together, they kind of come as a package at this point.
There are two mitigating circumstances here. The mental health issues that are being addressed, he's back on his meds, he's back in therapy. It sounds like those were conditions that she laid down on staying in this relationship, on her continuing to see him, that he get the help that he clearly needs. That's one mitigating circumstance. The other would be, well, I actually can't identify it as a mitigating circumstance. It would be a mitigating circumstance, if you can get me the answer to this question, if you can talk to your friend about whether this is a part of a pattern of abuse. And if this abuse, this kind of physical violence or physical intimidation has occurred or occurs regularly, even when he's on his meds and when he is seeing his therapist, if indeed this was something that has never happened before, an outlier, and something that she thinks, and your friend has agency here and she's an adult, that they can work past and is tied to and can be attributed to a kind of breakdown when he went off his meds and out of therapy, then it's not irrational of your friend to agree to stay in this relationship, not indefinitely, not eternally, but conditionally, on the condition that this sort of abuse never happens again, on the condition that he take his meds on the condition that he get his ass to the therapist's office. And the question then becomes, how do you support your friend? Well, you hold her accountable to the promise she's made herself, not to a promise that she's made you guys, that she will stay in this relationship on those conditions. And you welcome this guy back into your homes and into your social circles conditionally, with the same conditions, same expectations, the same demands, that this never happen again, and that your acceptance of him back into your homes, back at parties, is tied to him taking his meds, seeing his therapist, and never laying a finger on your friend again in anger. And if he can walk that walk, if he can do and be better, at some point you have to accept him and accept that if indeed there's no pattern here and this was an outlier and it is tied to his mental illness, that it was tied to his mental illness. And while that's not an excuse, it is the context. And there can be, in a circumstance like this, even some empathy for him, depending on how he frames this and understands it and talks about it. But part of the accountability that you bring to the table as friends and as a social circle around these people is there were witnesses. This happened in front of people. You can talk to him about it. Others who are alarmed can talk to him about it too. And hold not just your friend accountable for the decision and the choice that she's making, but hold him accountable for his actions. You guys don't have to pretend not to have seen what you saw. It is a difficult circumstance, and we want to have these kind of red lines. You laid a hand on my friend, you're out. But often life is a little bit more complicated than that. There are mitigating circumstances, like a mental health issue. There wasn't an underlying mental health issue. There wasn't meds and therapists and interventions. I would say cut him out and cut him off. He's an abuser and violent and doesn't recognize or isn't capable of recognizing that the problem is his. Hauled off and decked your friend at a party or shoved your friend at a party. Out he goes. Cut him off. Don't enable the relationship by welcoming him back in. But if there are genuine mental health issues here that led to this incident, this crisis, and he's genuinely remorseful and taking the steps he needs to take to make sure he's in good enough working order to be in this relationship and for your friend to be safe in this relationship, I think you've got to welcome him back in at some point. But, of course, conditionally, on the condition that meds, therapy, never again.
Hey, Dan. I'm an Australian male in my 20s. I've got an odd question. I'm deaf in one ear, and I actually quite enjoy it when people lick my ear or kiss my ear or bite my ear. I'm wondering if that is a common thing for people with disabilities. Like, do people who have physical ailments tend to fetishize sexual things being done to those ailments?
Mostly when you hear about physical disabilities and fetishization, it is people with physical disabilities who object to being fetishized by admirers and aficionados, as they're often called or as they style themselves. I've never quite gotten this question before, so I've never really dug into it before. Someone being turned on, someone with a disability being turned on by the sight of their disability being eroticized or being paid attention to in erotic context. It seems to me, though, that in your case, this is as likely to be a coincidence as it is to be the fetishization of your disability. A lot of people like to have their ears kissed and licked and bitten. Most people who like to have their ears kissed and licked and bitten are not deaf in one ear or both ears. It's just something about the cartilage and the nerve endings and the thinness of the skin there and the closeness to the head that I think makes that arousing for many people, myself included, and I ain't deaf in either ear. So maybe this is how you have framed it or how you have come to understand why you enjoy this. But it seems to me that you may have read causation into correlation. However, if it is only the ear in which you are deaf that you enjoy this kind of attention, maybe there is something to that. Maybe there is a link between your disability and your enjoyment of someone kissing, biting, and licking that ear. But I think odds are better that this is not linked. You know, we the things that turn us on, we're always trying to find some root cause, something in our childhood or our experience or our physical bodies that explains why X makes us feel Y. And the unsatisfying answer is that our turn-ons are pretty random, randomly assigned, randomly inspired. And, you know, we're a storytelling species. We tell stories about our societies and our cultures and our families and ourselves to better understand ourselves. And we do that with sex, too. We try to tell ourselves a story that makes things make sense. But many things, particularly in the sexual realm, don't make any fucking sense. And there are no links, and there's not really causation that can be established. It's better just to roll with it. And I think it's totally legitimate to tell ourselves those stories about who we are sexually. It helps us understand who we are, or create a framework that makes us feel better about who we are, or communicate who we are sexually to others. But all you got to do is look at the spanking crowd to figure out that the stories we tell ourselves are pretty fucking subjective. Half the spanking folks out there will tell you that they're turned on by spanking because they got spanked as a kid and they made some sort of erotic association about the intimacy and the closeness, and however fucked up that is, and you shouldn't spank your kids, that's how they ended up being into spanking, they will tell you as adults. And the other half of the spanking crowd will tell you that they weren't spanked as kids, and they thought that that was so weird and compelling that other kids were spanked and they began to fantasize about it and fetishize about it and blah, blah, blah. So people tell themselves stories. They're really subjective. We need to tell stories. Again, we're a storytelling species and a myth-making species. But there often isn't an answer, not an objective one, not a verifiable one. But tell those stories. You've definitely heard me talk about MeUndies. They're the fun, comfy undies that feel as good as they look. To those of you who haven't tried them yet, listen up. You can get incredible underwear sent to your door with MeUndies, meaning no more hunting around for the perfect pair at a crowded store and eventually settling for good enough. MeUndies are made with sustainably sourced material from beechwood trees. Their naturally soft fiber makes a fabric that won't sag down or ride up. Trust me, once you put on a pair, you will get it. Nancy loves the new sushi design, and their simple boxer brief is simply perfect. MeUndies is so sure you will love your first pair that if you're not happy, they'll do whatever they can to get you into the right pair. And if they can't, keep them and they'll refund you. So it really is risk-free to try the best underwear ever. And if you're already part of the MeUndies fam, tell your friends about it through their referral program. They'll get a discount and you'll get a store credit. Win-win. And MeUndies has a special deal for my listeners. First-time purchasers get 20% off their first pair of MeUndies and free shipping. That's 20% off plus free shipping and a guarantee that you and your MeUndies will be very happy together. Get your butt over to MeUndies.com and treat yourself and your butt. To get your 20% off your first pair, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/savage. That's MeUndies.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I am a 27-year-old cis female from North Carolina. I've been in a monogamous relationship with my boyfriend for about a year and a half now, and we have a great, very honest relationship, and it's the first one for both of us in which we actually enjoy being committed to another person, so that's awesome. I was raised in a very conservative religious home, and there's been a lot of shame connected to sex for me, and so he's been really gentle about that, even though I've had a lot of sex-related anxiety, but it's helped it go away a little bit. So pretty early on in the relationship, he told me that he was bi and enjoyed sucking a cock here and there and thought, you know, maybe us having a threesome at some point would be fun. And at the time, I was accepting of it, but it just brought back a lot of negative emotions and shame and insecurity. And so he didn't push it, and I told him, let's just table it for a while. And so when I'm scared about something, I research the shit out of it. And so I read everything I could about threesomes until I finally got to a point where I was like, okay, this is kind of exciting, actually. And so that research kind of led to me to where I am now, a year later. And finally, at 27, I just have to let you know, I'm in this phase of my own sexual rediscovery where I am like, exploring my own desires and reading a lot about it and trying out sex toys and enjoying porn finally and all of that. So that's awesome. I've also admitted to myself finally that I am definitely bisexual, and I have told him too. And so now we've hit this wave of excitement. He's like, well, let's do this. Let's find another couple to have sex with and blah, blah, blah. And the anxiety is kind of setting back in. And I think it's because I've realized that this sexual discovery is very much my own, and maybe I need to go have sex with some women by myself without him in the room, get kind of prepared and try new things. And it almost feels unfair because, I don't know, it feels unfair to him. So now I need to kind of ask him if he'd be willing to open it up first before we do things together. And I don't know how he's going to take that. And so I'm wondering if you have any advice for someone who has pre-group sex jitters as well as pre-first time with another person jitters, and finally telling your partner you want to open it up jitters.
For some people, only playing together, that we're a couple, we're committed, we used to be monogamous, we only play together, is a kind of monogamy. They perceive it as a kind of monogamy, that there are these sexual adventures that we have, and that is something that we share and something we do together. So the other people that we're having sex with, it's still about us and still about our partner bond. There are hilarious studies out there where they asked people if they were monogamous, and people said indeed they were monogamous. And then they dug down into the subject's sexual behavior and sexual history, and what they found was that the couple being interviewed had sex with other people together, and they identified that as monogamous behavior. So your boyfriend's reaction to the news that you're interested now in exploring your bisexuality, but at least at first you want to do it on your own. And I can understand why you might want to do that. I can understand your nerves. And this is something that you can talk about with your boyfriend when you raise a subject. I just think you need to be completely honest, as he has been, to his credit, completely honest with you. There's a lot of bi guys out there in relationships with women who are not out because they fear being dumped. And so they aren't themselves with their girlfriends. They're not out to their girlfriends or their wives. So good on your bi boyfriend for being out. Now it's your turn to be out to him about your truth, which is you are interested maybe in group sex at some point down the road, but as you've come into the sense of your own bisexuality, when you imagine your first sexual experiences with women, you would prefer that to be a one-on-one thing where you're not performing bisexuality for him, not that he's made that demand, but maybe that's your anxiety, and that you're able to just be fully present as an individual and not half a couple. And then see what he says. It might be fine with him. If that's the path that you need to walk that gets you to this place where he would like to be and has told you he'd like to be, where you guys can have sexual adventures together with others, three ways or four ways with other couples, he might be only too delighted to say, go, explore, do what you need to do, and let's keep talking. And he might be even aroused by the thought, especially if, even if he can't be there, he gets to be part of the prep, part of getting you there, helping you pick out whatever you're going to wear, and then hearing all about it when you get home. That might for him be exciting. And so there might be something in it for him, if you're willing to share that part of it with him, the getting ready to go, the going on the date, the story, the afterwards, the come down. If you're willing to share all that with him, then there might be something in it for him that is valuable to him. And so you're not cheating him out of anything. This is something that he may perceive as you two doing together, even if he doesn't get to be in the room at the time. But it all depends on his reaction. So the only way to this is through this. You're going to have to tell him what you're thinking and how you're feeling. And that shouldn't be that hard, considering that there's a long established pattern in your 1.5-year relationship of truth telling. And the telling of truths, in his case, when he told you he was bi, where he didn't know how you were going to react. A lot of bi guys tell their girlfriends that they're bi, and that is the end of the relationship. He risked everything telling you that. Well, now you are going to take a risk telling him where you're at and how you're feeling and how you want to move forward in this phase of your sexual self-discovery. Does he want to be there with you and beside you during this exploration, even if he can't be there beside you literally at every moment of it? I'm thinking he's going to be fine with it. Maybe he won't be delighted at first. Maybe it's not optimal. Maybe it's not the choice that he would make. Maybe it's not what he would fantasize about. But maybe it's a route he's willing to take with you on your journey of sexual self-discovery together, even if there's going to be a little detour where you're journeying on your own. For my busy listeners, when it comes to dinner, let Blue Apron take care of the planning and shopping while you take care of the cooking and eating. You'll enjoy delicious meals like seared steaks and spicy peppers with yuzu and miso-dressed sweet potatoes, or spicy poblano and enoki mushroom tortas with chipotle mayo on the table in 30 minutes or less. With incredible ingredients and chef-designed recipes, Blue Apron lets you see what the power of food can do. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country, and I am a paying customer myself, and I am slowly, gradually learning how to cook, which is not something I ever thought I would do or be good at, but Blue Apron has helped me do it and get pretty good at it. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Blue Apron achieves this by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs like me. Blue Apron offers three plans, a two-person meal plan, a family plan, and a wine plan. We go with the family plan, so we always have lots of delicious leftovers. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals for free by going to blueapron.com/savage. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so do not wait. That's blueapron.com/savage. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Hi, Dan. I'm a female cis from the East Coast. I have a friend. He's my best friend, and we have been friends for probably over 15 years. And it wasn't until probably recently where things started getting a little more physical with each other. But I really, really respect him as a friend and would love to keep it that way. It's just that I have my own sexual frustrations. I haven't gotten much in the past little while. And for me, it's more of like a convenience thing, but I know for him, it's more of like an emotional thing. And recently, he had come over, we were both drunk, and I told him that he could stay over at my apartment, and I had masturbated in front of him. And now I'm just very scared to text him, and I really miss our friendship together, and I feel like I may have crossed a boundary with him, and I would just love some advice.
Well, hello there, Louise CK. The thing in your question that really gave me pause and filled me with concern was when you said, for me, it's a convenience thing. For him, it's an emotional thing. He has feelings for you. He would like to be in a relationship with you. That's what emotional thing means. That's what you meant by that. And you do not share those feelings. You do not reciprocate those feelings. You could take or leave him. And you used him. You masturbated in front of him because it turned you on. And part of what probably turned you on, because power is sexy and sexy is power, was the imbalance there. Was that he really wants you and you don't really want him, and showing off, masturbating in front of him was a way of teasing him and kind of tormenting him about what he'll never have, which is a relationship with you. And so you were excited on some level, conscious or subconscious, by the power imbalance that you were masturbating about in front of him. Now you feel weird, and now you feel awkward texting him, and you should. Because he probably left your apartment maybe not feeling used or violated or traumatized like Louis C.K.'s victims, but at least feeling bad, at least feeling rejected on some level and negated on some level. And so the reason you haven't heard from him since is that he's hurt, because he knows that for you it was a convenience thing. And for him, it's an emotional thing and a feelings thing. And so you're going to have to make amends. You're going to have to fucking apologize to him and say, yeah, the other night when we were drunk and I did that, I really feel bad that I took our relationship there. You know, I see you as a friend. And if you guys have talked about the fact that he would want something more if you were open to it, then you need to cop to that. And I know that you would like to have something more with me, or you would like to be in a relationship with me, and that's not in the cards because I don't share those feelings. So me being sexual in front of you in that way isn't kind. It's exploitative. It's me using you in a way that is unfair, and I apologize, and that will not happen again. I am not going to treat you like a convenience thing, because you are not a convenience. You are a person with feelings. Feelings I think I hurt, which is why I haven't heard from you in a while, and I apologize. Do you have a personal sommelier? No, you poor thing. But fear not, there's a great way to choose wine that you will love. Introducing Wink, spelled W-I-N-C. Wink makes it easy to discover great wine. Because Wink's wine experts select wines matched to your taste, personalized for you, shipped right to your door, and starting at just $13 a bottle. There's nothing like coming home to a box full of delicious Wink wine selected just for you by your personal sommelier. Just fill out Wink's palate profile quiz, answer simple questions that your average store clerk wouldn't ask or translate into a recommendation. Questions like, how do you take your coffee? And how do you feel about blueberries? Then Wink sends you wines curated to your taste. The more wines you rate, the more personalized your monthly selections become. Each month, there are new delicious wines like the insanely popular Summer Water Rosé. No membership fees, skip any month, cancel any time. Shipping is covered, and if you don't like a bottle they send you, they will replace it with a bottle you'll love. No questions asked. Discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/savage. You'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywinc.com/savage for $20 off. trywinc.com/savage, $20 off.
Hi, Dan and Tech Savvy Youth. I am a cis woman living in the Northwest. I recently had a discussion with a group of people online about being a lesbian and not wanting to date trans women who still have their born sexual, well, basically penises. I am not attracted to transgender women who have penises. I am not attracted to men who have penises. I just am not. They went to tell me that my view and what I'm feeling is transphobic, and I just don't understand how not wanting to sleep with trans women who have penises or men who have penises is being transphobic or heterophobic. I'm a lesbian. I prefer cis women or transgendered men who do not have penises. They told me that sleeping with a transgendered man with a penis is just the same as sleeping with a cis woman with a toy. And I just disagree. Dan, can you please help me understand how this is transphobic? I feel like I have the right to have my sexual preference, and my sexual preference is no penises.
I was having a conversation just the other day with a gay male friend in his 20s who dates trans men in addition to gay cis men. And we were walking and talking, Los Angeles, having this convo. And I said that, you know, penis is really important to me. And maybe that's just age. And maybe if I was a younger gay man and the whole transgender revolution had picked up pace a little earlier in my life, I'd be down. And he said something interesting and revealing. He said he doesn't really care about dick. He's a top and dick don't matter to him. And so a cute guy with more holes than the average cis guy, he's there. And I was like, oh, well, dick matters to me. And it reminded me of a piece that I'd read previously and cited previously in Savage Love, a piece at Slate by Evan Urquhart, who's a trans person who writes about sex and sexuality and other issues. And I'm just going to quote from my column. Evan Urquhart, who writes about trans issues for Slate, argues that in addition to being gay, straight, bi, pandemic, etc., some people are phallophiles and some are vaginophiles. That is, some people, perhaps most people, have a strong preference for either partners with dicks or partners with vaginas. And some people, most people, want their dicks on men and their labia and or vaginas on women. There's no shame in it, Urquhart writes, as long as it doesn't come from a place of ignorance or hate. Mature adults should be able to talk plainly about their sexuality, particularly with prospective partners, in a way that doesn't objectify or shame anyone who happens to be packing the non-preferred equipment. So, your friends who are telling you that there's something transphobic about you being not just a lesbian, but a vaginophile lesbian, can go fuck themselves. You get to fuck the people that you want to fuck. We should all be thoughtful about the people we want to fuck. We should all interrogate our desires to make sure that they are actually our authentic desires, because there's a lot of cultural messaging and programming and shaming out there that seeks to channel our desires and our sexual behaviors in a certain way. But if you've interrogated them and you've really picked them apart and this is who you are and this is what you want, You can own that. And no one's allowed to tell you that you're doing it wrong. Nobody is owed sex, as a lot of people are pointing out in the discussion about incels. And nobody is required to sleep with anyone that they don't want to sleep with. When I say you should interrogate your desires and think about your desires, that's not so then the other people besides you can access your body so that you are doing who and what you want to do. Not because you owe anybody else anything. No one is owed sex. So the next time you get into an argument with one of your friends, just have the link on your phone ready to go. The piece that Evan Urquhart wrote is titled Straight Talk About Junk, Why the Terms Lesbian and Gay Are Linguistically Insufficient at Outward on Slate. Just have the link to that piece. Tell your friends you will happily discuss this issue with them further after they read this piece at Slate by a trans writer. And then after they're done reading it, you can tell them, I'm a vaginophile and a lesbian, and you can butt the fuck out of my sex life right now.
Hi, Dan. Long-time listener, first-time caller here. My wife and I have a monogamous relationship in so much that we go on dating apps like Tinder, occasionally match with a cute girl, bring her home, and put her in our bed for the evening. It is a lot of fun. Our issue is that as we've grown older and gotten used to this, we're moving away from the dating apps, and we really like the encounters you can have at monthly poly meetups. We're having two issues when we go to these meetups, however. First, there's sort of a vibe in the air of whoever you end up having a conversation with, even if it's just for the sake of conversation, we're expected to pursue them. However, how do we reject people that we're not physically attracted to, but yet just having a great conversation at these meetups? Inevitably, they ask for our phone number and try to escalate, and, you know, it seems kind of rude to tell them as soon as they walk up, hey, we're not going to fuck you, but we can talk. So there's got to be a better way to go about that. The second issue we're having is that the way our monogamous relationship works is that we only bring other women into it. We're getting into a lot of outright fights when we talk to couples and the male partner finds out that we don't take other males into the bedroom. We've had the women attack us and say that I am controlling my wife and not being egalitarian about this. We've had the male partners who say that I'm being selfish and controlling, and it gets out of hand because ultimately my wife just does not want to fuck other men. To use your ice cream analogy, I want to eat ice cream, and she doesn't want ice cream shut down her throat, or in this case, other cocks. So at these poly meetups, how do we go about having a good conversation with someone, but letting them know that we're not attracted to them to escalate, while also defending the nature of our monogamous relationship to other couples? I'd really appreciate some advice on this, Dan. Thanks.
Best practice, wait for the pass to deflect the pass. Don't get out in front of the pass and preemptively deflect a pass that the other person may not have made yet and may not have intended to make ever. It is possible that some of the people you meet at these events who are asking for your phone number enjoyed the conversation and are thinking of you as potential buddies and friends, at least to begin with. And so when they ask for your phone number and you're like, well, hey, look, you know, it was nice talking to you, and yeah, of course, but we don't want to touch you with our genitals, so I'll give you my phone number with that. That's just assholery. Somebody asks for your phone number, you can swap phone numbers. If somebody makes the pass, then you say, we're not interested. You're really nice. We enjoyed speaking with you and hanging out with you. We'd love to hang out and speak with you in the future. Let's be friends on the scene. But we're not interested in anything sexual. Just be straight and direct when the pass is made. As for the other issue, sounds like you're going to places where couples seek other couples. Poly meetups, swingers events, and then complaining that the other couples that you meet in these places where couples see couples were thinking of getting together with you guys as a couple, couple to couple. There are plenty of single and unattached bisexual women out there in the world seeking couples to play with, and maybe you should pursue them. There are also, of course, partnered women out there who are up for playing with another couple without their husbands present, and you can be explicit about being open to that scenario. Just like the previous caller, you are not obligated to sleep with anyone you do not wish to sleep with. You can have your rules about who comes into your bedroom, who comes into your wife, and nobody can gainsay your rules. That people are blowing up at you or getting angry at you guys because you have a no dicks rule and people are projecting onto you bullshit that you're not shitting, that's their problem. And you should push back hard against it. And you shouldn't have to speak for your wife about the no other dicks rule. There are some women who would love to have another dick, but their male partners on the swinging scene are so insecure that they're not allowing that to happen. That's not the case with you two. Your wife isn't interested in anybody else's dick. And she should say so. But yeah, again, you don't have to sleep with anybody you don't want to sleep with. Just like the lesbian vaginophile caller previously doesn't have to sleep with anybody she doesn't want to sleep with. As a general rule, as a hard and fast rule, no one has to sleep with anyone they don't want to sleep with. I can't understand how some people, particularly in sex-positive spaces, have a hard time wrapping their heads around that.
Hey, Dan. This is, I'm a gay guy from a metropolitan city on the East Coast. I just traveled to another metropolitan city on the East Coast, and I just opened things up with my partner. I was trying to get it on, and I'm just perplexed at all of the guys that are unconditionally barebacking without condoms. I just don't understand this phenomenon, and I think I'm frustrated. I guess I don't have a question. I'm just frustrated and want your reaction to this new phenomenon that's taking place where no one really wants to fuck with a condom on. I guess I'm just concerned for my health, and I know how clear you are about PrEP and safety, and I completely get that, and preventing HIV, and we've come so far medically, but like, Jesus Christ, nobody wants to fuck with a condom on anymore? Like, what's going on?
What's going on here is PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis, pills that sexually active gay and bi men can take, and that the World Health Organization and the Centers for Disease Control think all sexually active gay and bi men should take, that make it very, very unlikely that they will be infected with HIV. Not quite immunity. There have been a couple of cases of people who are infected with HIV despite being on PrEP and taking their meds, so it's not impossible to contract HIV on PrEP, but it is highly unlikely. It provides tremendous and very effective protection. Also going on here is undetectable equals uninfectious. Guys who are HIV positive, who are on their meds, who have undetectable viral loads, they look for HIV in the blood, they can't find it, they're uninfectious. A lot of gay and bi men have taken this as an indication that they don't need to use condoms for anal intercourse anymore. They have done the safety calculus and concluded that the pleasures of anal intercourse without condoms are so great that the protection condoms provide against other sexually transmitted infections, perhaps less worrisome ones, worth it. The risks are worth it. And we have seen in gay and bi male communities higher rates of other sexually transmitted infections as fewer and fewer men use condoms for anal intercourse. If you want to use condoms for anal intercourse to protect yourself from syphilis, gonorrhea, chlamydia, to lower your odds of contracting herpes or HPV, insist on condoms. No one wants to use them, but it's amazing how quickly a guy will put a condom on his dick if he must to get his dick into your butt. So, if condoms are important to you, and you know I recommend them to people. Syphilis is no fun. There are drug-resistant strains of gonorrhea that are circulating out there now. Chlamydia is no fun. Sexually transmitted infections up the butt are no fun, or up the dick, no fun. And condoms can protect you. People get to make their own choices. People get to assess the risk that they're willing to run for the pleasures that they wish to experience. And a lot of guys in our PrEP and undetectable equals uninfectious world, this new world, are concluding that anal without condoms is the choice that they want to make. It is not the choice that all gay men do make or have to make. And gay men out there and bi men out there who are using condoms to protect themselves from other sexually transmitted infections, even if they're on PrEP, good choice, good decision, good on you. That's the decision I would make.
Hi, Dan. This is calling in regards to the man who was uncertain about his partner, mastectomy, and if he was, like, if he could be attracted to her without boobs. My aunt had a double mastectomy and then had breast replacement surgery afterwards. And one of the boobs in her chest kind of migrated to the side, and she has a big scar on it. So she calls it her Frankenboob. And sometimes she kind of regrets getting the replacement surgery. So I just kind of wanted to remind the caller that sometimes you know, the replacement boobs might not be these, you know, perfect, natural-looking boobs you have in mind, and these can go wrong. And there's a lot of reasons why a woman might choose to opt out of this surgery.
Hi. In response to the woman in 604 who's upset that her man won't give her period sex, I am a bi lady with a lovely girlfriend who loves period sex. And I am a period haver, and it freaks me out. And no, I don't enjoy that at all, and I don't blame your boyfriend. But I do work around it, because you're right, we shouldn't be punished. And if you're okay with it, and she's okay with it, the receiver is cool with it, then what I do is use a vibrator on her clit, maybe a dildo in her butt. I haven't used one in her pussy yet, but I probably could and be okay with it. But I also feel comfortable knowing that if I told her that it just was too much, she'd be okay with that. So that's a big part of me wanting to please her, because I want to make her comfortable and she makes me comfortable. So give him a little benefit of the doubt. Tell him how it can really help your cramps, and tell him how period orgasms can be so amazing. But yeah, it's not for everyone.
Hi, I'm calling to leave a little message for the woman on episode 604 who is surrounded by assholes who recently stopped eating pork. Sounds like you might be a little bit smarter than everyone in your family and the guy that you married. I know this isn't a popular opinion, but not everyone has the brain power to question things. And it sounds like maybe you are just a diamond in the rough and you happen to have a little bit more brain power than the people around you. Doesn't mean you need to run away from them right now, but I have a feeling that after a couple years of questioning things and coming to conclusions that the people around you aren't smart enough to come to, you might want to run away and be surrounded by smarter people, maybe who are more liberal and who aren't afraid to ask questions that challenge the status quo. I hope you hear this, and I hope that when that day comes, if it does come, and I think that it will, you aren't afraid to step outside of that circle of people who just aren't functioning on the same level as you.
Hi, this is a response for the woman who called in about her family being pricks about her not eating pork. I have an idea, and it's probably like a 10-year investment, but what about getting a pig as a pet? Those little teacup pigs are freaking adorable, and I hear that the like larger pigs make really great family pets. And then name it something like a human name, like Anthony, and then they're going to look at pork products a lot differently after coming to love Anthony, the family pig.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Love Cast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Catch Hump. Hump is touring the country, my dirty little porn film festival. Go to humpfilmfest.com to find out when or if Hump is coming to and on you. Also, while you're online again, go to itmfa.org, order some merch, support three great organizations. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow that fuck-up, Brandy Jensen, on Twitter at Brandy L. Jensen. The Savage Love Cast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week with an installment of the Savage Love Cast. Thanks.